From KUAR News in Little Rock, I'm Jacob Kaufman. The tumult in the Little Rock School District, which is under state control, continues into the new year with plans to close or repurpose four schools. Many parents and traditional public school advocates are, to say it lightly, pretty upset about this. Little Rock School District Superintendent Michael Poor joins me in the studio. Thanks a lot for your time this week.
You bet. I appreciate the opportunity to be with you and to share with the public even more.
Can you kind of set the scene for us as you see it? Why are these closures necessary? What do you think the district will look like as emerges from all of this?
Well, that right there is a pretty deep question. So, first, I think everyone has to understand that the district has become aware, and this is several years ago, that the desegregation funds that come into the district each year are going to go away. We do get those funds next year.
And that's $37 million.
$37 million next year, but it all has to be used towards capital projects for this coming school year. But we have previously used that $37 million on a variety of different things that deal with our education programs. And so there's been a series of things that have happened. Cuts and reductions started clear back in 2014-15. All the budget reductions that are even being proposed right now this year, including the school closures and repurposing of buildings, these are things that have been discussed over a several-year span. They're just now at a place where we've kind of taken all the other steps to make reductions that total over $25 million. Now we got to go cut another $11 million for this coming school year.
Save Our Schools, which is a coalition of various community leaders, parents, and teachers, though clearly not all parents and teachers, and the now dissolved elected school board is also part of this coalition. One argument they make is that the burden of these financial cuts is being felt nearly entirely by poor and minority communities south of Interstate 630. Is that the case, or if it is, why?
Well, I guess the first thing that is maybe important to put in context is that we have to remember where the previous cuts and where the burden was. And the previous cuts really fell on our employees' shoulders. And oftentimes people don't realize and take that. So really our entire district employee groups, they had their contract days decreased. Some had as many as 5 days taken off their contract, some just two. But those are all things that hit someone right in the pocket. The other thing is that people's health insurance benefits, and that's every type of employee that you can imagine, from a parapro or a person working in the cafeteria up to a principal, had less benefits coming in from the district on their health benefits than what they previously had. And that was a $75 decrease per month in terms of the contribution that the district was making. Finally, for employees, there's been a lot of job reductions where we've eliminated positions, and some people have had to take on additional responsibilities. And so it's important, I think, to kind of start that in mind. The second thing
is... put those cuts in that context.
That's exactly right. The other thing, when you look at it in terms of, where you're at, is that you're looking at, the big picture of the entire district, and you're looking at enrollment trends over a three-year span to enrollment trends over a 15-year span, and there are just less students to be served. Many people probably don't know this, but there are 2,300 seats at the elementary level, and those 2,300 seats, that's before we even start talking about portables that are also a part of our school district, and now you exceed 4,000 seats that are available. So, the target here is trying to make a decision that when we make a closure or a repurpose, that we can move students into a situation where we actually think that we can have as strong of academic program as what they're currently having, and that we also can make these reductions to fit into our budget.
Let's discuss that issue of neighborhood growth a little bit. Part of this is based on the neighborhoods those schools are surrounding. The school district and the city government are separate entities. I'll make that clear to listeners. But do you ever feel like you're forced maybe into a silo in terms of how you think about the bottom line of the district, as opposed to some of these community groups are thinking of broader concerns like what will happen to the neighborhood? Are you able to consider the overall neighborhood health in that holistic kind of way, or do you feel forced?
Well, I think that's one of the things that is important to look at when you're looking at doing some things such as a closure or repurposing, is trying to look at, say, well, what's the next step? And so, one of the things that is a part of our plan is that if we move forward, for instance, with Franklin, and I am firm on my recommendation at this point, but the commissioner obviously has the right to modify it. If the commissioner does approve it, as an example with Franklin, we will ask for proposals to come in of how that building can be repurposed to best benefit the community. And we will publicly share, you know, what people have put in, and be very open and frank and allow input to come in about the plus and minuses of the approaches that, that people share with us about how to utilize those buildings. We have two buildings that we don't have a specific purpose for. One is Woodruff, and the second one is Franklin. Mm-hmm.
One recurring argument from groups like Save Our Schools, and this is from before your appointment by the state, is that fundamentally the state shouldn't be in the position to make these types of decisions at all. Their arguing is that the district was taken over for academic distress reasons. These are clearly fiscal issues that have academic tie-ins, though. Is it possible to separate those two, the idea of academic and fiscal distress?
I actually think so. Now, I know that there's some people that will probably argue against that, but we're still a school district. We still have a budget that we know how many dollars are going to come in or out of, and we know what our revenue stream is, and we know what our expenditures are. And so we still have a responsibility to utilize the resources entrusted us in a really good fashion to impact achievement. If we don't take care of that, now you end up actually adding on to distress where you could be in fiscal distress. And that's the last thing we need. We need to make sure that we do everything we can to get out of academic distress, but we also can't get into fiscal distress. And so bottom line, we have to balance our budget. And, you know, these reductions, you know, when you look at it, $37 million, and really what we've targeted is 41, because the number is 41 because we had money coming in from both school districts that we've worked with on desegregation. There's money coming in there. And so, you know, we have a little higher number. We've got to get there, and it's not easy, especially after you've already made, you know, almost $30 million worth of cuts up to this point.
One more question on the legitimacy subject, so to speak. A lot of prominent African Americans, though clearly not all of them, thinking of John Walker, who has a marker on the state civil rights trail for his work in education in the past, they view all of these decisions, and decisions dating back from before your tenure as superintendent, as being firmly rooted in the history of African Americans being marginalized by the state. Do you think they're wrong about that?
Well, I what I feel like is that what we're trying to do as a district is make sure every student gets served the very best ability that we have within our staff and within our resources. And we think that the achievement levels as a result of these closures will not be impacted, and in some ways might even be enhanced because of the work of having, you know, if you have in schools, you kind of have almost targets of population. If you get above 500, it lends itself to additional counselors and assistant principal, full-time nurses, full-time art and PE teachers all in the building at the same time. So we think that we can actually have a better situation. The other thing is that if you have four or five teachers working together, that's really the ideal in terms of a professional learning community approach, that if you ask any educator, that's really kind of a neat target for a team to work together to plan instruction and plan delivery to students.
A big event on the horizon for Lenox School District is a tax vote and a special election coming up to keep a tax in place. It's been around for quite a while in the Little Rock area. Why do you need this tax measure to pass, and do you feel its chances are compromised at all with news of closures?
Well, it makes it that much tougher, you know, when you've got a significant issue that is contentious with school closure. I totally get that. And the way that I would respond back to the community is that we have a responsibility to do everything that we can to create great learning environments for our kids. And so the reality is that there have been capital needs that have been ignored in the district or have not been taken care of for a long period of time. In 2014, there was a study done by Fannie Howey that was delivered to the then Board of Education. It outlined over $300 million worth of capital needs, and those things have not been addressed. So, you know, the plan here is, yes, we're trying to balance our budget on just the, you know, everyday budget type thing, but we're trying to enhance a budget on kind of the other part of the ledger where we can actually enhance in learning environments. And, you know, some of these things are pretty simple, you know, really improved lights, making sure that we have better windows, improving our heat and air systems. Those are all important things to create a better learning environment. And the other positive thing is that they actually have a return on investment. So if we do these things right, our heat and energy bills will decline. And so that's a positive thing. And finally, when you look at just, you know, a promise made to this community, again, before my arrival, was to build a high school in the Southwest. And that's sorely needed. If you go look at McClellan and Fair, McClellan has no windows. And people have talked about that for a long time, that, you know, it's really, you know, it's a credit to the students and the staff that they do what they do each and every day, but it is a substandard building, bottom line. And Fair is a substandard building. We've got to do something about it. And I'm going to make sure I fulfill that promise one way or another to get that high school built.
Closures and special election aside, where would you say we are on the path in terms of restoring that local control and fixing those economic distress issues? The tests that were used to justify the original takeover are no longer used by the state, and there was a one-year pause in accountability directed through the legislature. How do you assess where you are right now?
Well, we actually are going to get a little bit of an inkling of where we stand in the next, I would think, 2 or 3 weeks, where the state has actually taken the test that was done this past spring, along with the test that was done the previous year, along with the old Arkansas assessment, so three different assessments, and they've tried to combine that data into some sort of aggregate that allows them to say, do we want to make any changes on these schools that are tagged as academically in distress? So even though they've kind of shared already that no one is going to be added onto the list, or they are going ahead and doing the work to try to bring in all of that information, and it's possible that we could have some schools taken off the list. In particular, McClellan and Fair, in my mind, have a chance of, they had some pretty good test results that maybe that will help them. The next time where we really can make a difference is the testing that will occur in the spring, in April, with ACT Aspire test. And so those are critical for the five schools that are under distress. To get to that place where we're really going to have a chance is the work that's going on during the course of this school year is critical. And we've developed an Achieve Team process, Achieve Team. Achieve Team is really about allowing each of those five distressed campuses, along with some of our other schools that are lower performers, that are either focused or priority schools, to develop plans to say, here's what we think we can do to really move the needle in terms of academic achievement. As they think about trying to move the needle, we know that you create a plan and then there's barriers. Well, we bring in a whole group of people, sometimes as many as 20 people, into these Achieve Means just to help them break through their barriers, whether that's through PD, sometimes it's an additional tech needs, or in other times it's about some specific engagement of coaching into these PLC, professional learning community environments, to enhance the discussion, the dialogue, and ultimately the delivery to kids.
Changes to the school district aren't just from your leadership or from the Department of Education and John A. Key. All the state legislature is obviously involved in a lot of this. They just began their session 2 or 3 weeks ago. There's a whole host of bills. Specifically, one comes to mind that for districts under distress, they would dismiss the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act. Do you plan to speak out at all during the legislative session?
Well, and I've kind of been outspoken about that particular bill in maybe two specific ways. I have shared with other media that I don't believe that it's a bill that's necessary. I've also talked to Representative Cozart to share that out of all the things that impact distressed schools, I think that's one that is very low on my radar in terms of something that needs to be done. I think there are other things that we've got to focus on. You know, we got to make sure that we have a great principal at every one of those campuses, and I feel like we're on the right track in that area. We've got to also make sure that we provide professional development. You know, people coming out of college are really not ready and prepared to be in a classroom where students might be coming in three grades below. So we've got to work on that. And of course, then there's kind of a system issue. If you have people three grades below, you know, that means that there's something else that happened at the middle school and elementary that we've got to address. So in terms of the target of dismissal, I put that kind of on a lower level. And the other thing is, every time I've ever worked with a teacher association in any school district, I've always gotten cooperation when there's someone that's just not cutting it and is a poor performer. The teacher association has helped in terms of having that person, you know, go on to another thing, because we've got to have great educators.
Here's a hypothetical for you. Say the Teacher Fair Dismissal Act is changed by the legislature. Would you choose to operate under those new rules, which dismiss a lot of the protections for teachers, or would you want to continue working in the previous style?
What I would suggest is if this does get passed, which I've already said I'm not in favor of, right. I think that what we'd sit down with our teacher association and discuss, you know, what it is, because there'll be some aspect of a bill. Usually there's things that get tagged onto a bill, so you'd want to kind of go through that with them. Between now and when the legislative session ends, you know, bills like this can evolve. Right. And so we'd want to sit down with that teacher association group, with our administrators, with our principals, and try to, you know, even if it were to pass, you know, determine which parts, if any, we'd want to utilize.
So four of these schools are up for either closure or being repurposed. There's some debate about, from some of these groups you mentioned earlier, concern about what will happen to these vacant buildings in the future. Some of the more pointed concerns from some of these groups are the fear that they'd be turned over to private operators or charter schools or something like that.
Well, and that's, you know, part of why that plan is to allow community to first off present concepts to come in, and then allow the community to look overall at all of the proposals and say this makes sense for this school, and or no, it doesn't. Here's why we're opposed. So we just get started on that through the month of February, and then have more public conversations on that in March. I think also there are probably some community members that would be interested in just, you know, how will we know, you know, for our students. And so, you know, once the recommendation, if it is approved, you know, our student service group will go to work in terms of, you know, determining where students move. Now, Franklin is a little bit easier because we know that Franklin's recommendation is go all towards Stevens. Wilson's a little more complex because that's four schools, Brady, Bale, Romine, and Western Hills, where kids could go. So we've kind of got to work that out. Plus, we also want to extend the options that parents have, because I think some people felt like, you know, Carver was a done deal and that it might be getting closed as well. So we will open that up to allow some people to go towards Carver as a magnet or any of our other magnets for about a one-week time period if this is approved. The other mm-hmm. thing is we know that we've got to get kids into those buildings, because that's a key part of, you know, being successful with a decision like this is assimilating the cultures of the kids meeting the new staff and getting to see their new building. It's also about talking to our employees, and that was something that came out of those community meetings.
As many of these employees will stay on board, just moving to other schools.
We don't feel like we're going to lose any elementary staff. Now, part of our budget reductions does show a tightening of staff for school staffing that's going to be $3 million, but we think that's mainly going to happen at the middle school and high school. We will tighten elementary a little bit if we can, but if we lose anyone at the elementary, it'll probably be just through attrition. But we will work with everyone from classified staff to our teachers to our principals in terms of talking to them, interacting with them, keeping them in the loop, and trying to make sure that they understand all the options and choices they have in terms of where they will be the following year. And the final thing is that, you know, you've got to work with our partners. Each one of these school sites and even the programs like Hamilton and also Woodruff Preschool, they have partners. And so we've got to work with those partners to make transitions toward the new sites, because we don't want to lose a church maybe that's been very involved with a school, nor do we want to lose anyone that's been helping us out with the clinic that's currently at Franklin.
What would you say to parents who maybe just applied for some of these schools and aren't no longer an option for the next year?
That applied like towards Franklin, is that
yeah.
the question? Well, that's why we're opening up the window just a little bit, so that people can be able to not only either choose their home attendance area or go towards a magnet if that's what they want.
With these, if any of these buildings, the community can't find an appropriate use for them, they're vacant for a year or so, and a charter school organization comes in and thinks they can do a good job with that facility, do you think that'd be good or bad for the district if another school operation moves into the facility?
Well, my opinion is that we have plenty of elementary seats,
right.
you know, within yeah, this right. community. You know, I just shared that we have, you know, over 2,300 in our own elementaries. We have another 4,000 when you add in portables. So, you know, in terms of just, you know, seats and availability and educational options, I think that we've got that in Little Rock right now. And so I'm personally not in favor of advancing more charter options through our buildings that we're closing.
Superintendent Mike Poore, head of the Little Rock School District, steering the ship in this time of transition right now. Thanks a lot for walking us through a lot of these complicated issues. I'm sure we'll be speaking with you in the weeks ahead. Thanks a lot for your time, though.
I sure appreciate it. Thank you, Jacob.